you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hello, wackos. Welcome to another riveting episode of Without a Country. I am your anchor, Corinne Fisher. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much to everyone who listens, supports. A reminder, if you're in Dublin, Ireland, I, Corinne Fisher, will be headlining Whelan's on Monday, April 3rd. It's a weird day to do a show. I don't put that past you, but that's what worked out with my vacation, because this is a vacation, but you know me, I can't just go on a vacation without making work for myself. Plus, I want to meet all the Irish fuckers and wackos. I want to see you guys. And so I'm so excited too. That show is more than halfway sold out, but there are some tickets remaining. Would love to sell it out. So tickets are available at CorinneFisher.com. It's also on Ticketmaster Ireland. Let's sell that puppy out again Monday, April 3rd at Whelan's. And my best friend Tommy will be there with me, who is an actual licensed therapist. So I'll be able to give you my advice, very unlicensed, but still pretty good. And then Dr. Thomas Whitfield's advice, licensed. And our friend Grant will be there too, but he hates attention. So I don't even know how we're friends with that guy, right? Crazy. All right, let's get to the news. What a week it is. It's another school shooting, obviously, because it had been, what, a couple weeks. So that happened, and that'll be our main story. But we're going to get through a lot of other stuff here today. Still celebrating Women's History Month with a slew of domestic violence, rape stories, a guy fucking a 13-year-old. So just really a celebration of womanhood and what it means to be a woman. But I do want to thank Jorge. He did get me a sugar-free Red Bull. They stopped carrying them at gas because, you know, budget issues. but I really need a Red Bull at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. And so I really thank you for getting that. You're a good man. So not all men are bad, but a lot of people are bad. Okay. So
just, hail Satan.
It's not really an attack on men. That's just kind of my nook and cranny of the world and the internet. That being said, of course, this week's enemy of the state, it's guns and men. Because when you look at the stories today, there's really no other way to frame it. So,
enemy of the state.
Sorry, men. But maybe you'll do better another week. I don't know what to tell you. I guess... All right, we'll get into the whole transgender discussion regarding the shooting. The shooting really has everything that America loves. A conversation about being transgender, guns, and kids getting killed in a school, which is that seems to be right now America's three top favorite things. So that kind of story has everything that you need, everything that you're looking for. We'll have a larger discussion about that. How was my week? Oh, my, you know, I spent the week on Guys We Fucked, taking down another alleged abuser, Mark Harley. If you haven't watched that episode, I highly recommend it on YouTube, because that's a whole mess. He is a fellow, I hate using that word when it's someone bad, but fellow podcaster. And so that's a bit of a shit show circus that's unfolding. If you didn't watch the emergency release episode of Guys We Fucked, we delve into that a bit. You know, and then there's lots of incredible comments about how, you know, they're abusing each other. I don't know. It's all allegedly. I really went into it on that show, though, but I just wanted to direct your attention. If you are merely a wacko and not a fucker, it might interest you, because it is a domestic abuse slash violence story. Definitely trigger warning if you are a survivor of domestic abuse. It's probably going to really stir up some feelings inside you. So I apologize. But I thought it was important to bring to the table. That being said, that, you know, that links perfectly with this first story that I saw actually before the whole Mark Harley, Luana Mancuso coverage that we did. This is from Rolling Stone. This is our first story in Girl today. And it's very girl this week. This is Evan Rachel Wood is the latest celebrity victim of an online misogyny playbook. And I know a lot of you loved my coverage of the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial. And then a lot of you thought I was, you know, crazy, man hater, all this stuff. I mean, first, I'd like to point out that I still get a lot of dick, guys. So men aren't mad at me. So if you're mad at me, maybe you look within. And it's not bragging. It's not hard to get men, but it just, I think you guys have the wrong idea about what it means to be an outspoken woman, and that I think there is this kind of fear amongst women, because we are so programmed to care, heterosexual women, because we are so programmed to care about men finding us attractive and wanting to fuck us. I think part of the reason more women don't speak out is because we think, or some of us think that, like, we're not going to get fucked. We're not going to have a boyfriend. We're not going to get married. Like, none of those things are true. just so you know, like, there's never been, I've never talked out about an issue and then like had like a lull in dick. Just if that was your fear, if that's the reason you're not speaking out, if that's the reason you're like calling me crazy man hater, like, it's not, that's not so. And I think that's a fear that has been ingrained in us, because that's one of the few things that society tells us makes us valuable. So that's that. But anyway, I knew was going to happen, you know, celebrities who have been accused of domestic violence and sexual assault and all these kind of things started using the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial as a playbook. And it is going to affect so many cases like that moving forward for years to come. I truly believe that the way that ruling came out in America, again, reminder, they did not rule in favor of Johnny Depp in the UK, but the way the ruling came out in America, I feel like that's going to set back the work that we, like, you know, Me Too movement kind of thing, has for a decade. It was incredibly destructive. So Rolling Stone put this in the section Woman Hating 101, which does make me laugh. It's pretty funny. Evan Rachel Wood is the latest celebrity victim of an online misogyny playbook. The ongoing defamation case against Wood is getting the Amber Heard treatment. And again, this is no surprise. And, you know, I'm coming at that. Like, I didn't give a shit, you know, about Amber Heard or Johnny Depp as celebrities. But Marilyn Manson, I mean, that one cut me right in the fucking heart. One of my top favorite celebrities of all time. And even I was able to say goodbye to him. Again, the goodwill in my neighborhood got so much merch, if anyone's interested. So in a February 2021 statement on Instagram, actress Evan Rachel Wood said she was done being silent. Quote, the name of my abuser is Brian Warner, also known to the world as Marilyn Manson, Wood said. He started grooming me when I was a teenager and horrifically abused me for years. I was brainwashed and manipulated into submission. Before this statement, Wood had spent more than 3 years being a vocal advocate for women experiencing domestic assault and abuse, but her post was the first time she publicly named Warner, whom she met when she was 18 years old, as her alleged abuser. Wood also said that she hoped to call out the industries that enabled him, regardless of the fear of retaliation. Warner has denied all of Wood's allegations and in March 2022 sued Wood for defamation, which is basically the move. You know, that's what you do. You sue for defamation. You say things aren't true. And that is why even when you are speaking out against an abuser, like, you kind of have to use terminology like alleged, because otherwise you're going to get fucked. We've seen it not only large scale, but I've seen it personally small scale in small cases within the comedy community, because, you know, we're fucking swimming in, you know, abuse and rape allegations here. That's what we do. In legal documents, Warner's legal team claimed Wood created a, quote, conspiracy to cast him as a rapist and abuser, a malicious falsehood that has derailed his successful music, TV, and film career. And since the suit began in earnest, Warner's fans have used their platform to attack and harass Wood and his other accusers. I will stop here to say that as someone who has been to multiple Marilyn Manson concerts, I don't know how much it's going to affect his career as far as his fan base. Because, yeah, I just don't know that it will. I think it will affect him in that many venues will choose not to allow him to perform there. But we've seen comedians work their way around this, large-scale comedians like Chris D'Elia. And so it's definitely possible, because there's enough venues and there's enough people who just want to make money and don't really care what someone did. So I don't know that it has derailed his music career. Okay. I've also been watching his Instagram numbers. Didn't seem to derail those. I unfollowed him, but I don't think that made an impact on his life at all. Okay. In the last year, Amber Heard, Angelina Jolie, Megan Thee Stallion, and Wood have all accused past celebrity partners of abuse or violence, only to have armies of fans accuse them of lying, misrepresent their legal proceedings, and encourage misogynistic rhetoric against them. When Heard lost the highly publicized defamation case filed by her ex-husband, Johnny Depp, she told NBC News' Savannah Guthrie that her portrayal on social media played an outsized role in the outcome. I think the vast majority of this trial was played out on social media. I think that this trial is an example of that gone haywire, gone amok, and the jury is not immune to that, Heard said. I think even the most well-intentioned juror, it would have been impossible to avoid this. But the end of Heard's case didn't end the attacks. Instead, accounts that successfully monetized video after video about Heard have begun to repeatedly latch on to other cases of abuse involving celebrities, creating a playbook of misogyny that puts famous women and their reputations on trial. Again, we've seen this time and time again. You know, women's when we are accused of something, it is so much more about how we dress, who we are, if we're a whore, if we're hot, if we have fake boobs, if we've slept with X amount of people, things that just really aren't, you know, brought into play for men. I mean, for God's sakes, look at all the shit that came up about Donald Trump, and he still became the president of the United States of America. It's pretty wild. To be a woman who gains empathy from society, you have to be pretty much fucking flawless. And who is flawless? No one is the answer. If you raised your hand, you're mentally unstable. Here's how it works. A celebrity, usually a woman, alleges that a past partner, also famous, has been abusive or violent. Documents are filed and journalists begin to report on the case. Online accounts that have commented on at least one case in the past glom onto the coverage, often directly co-opting reporting and then twisting its findings. These accounts are usually run by people who hop from case to case, taking the side of the famous man involved and using the account's past notoriety in other cases to draw new and return other viewers. Outside interest in famous names means the videos pop up in searches and gain popularity, especially when the information provided differs from more reputable sources like news sites. So that's what's, you know, that's what's happened with this, you know, new conversation about how like the news is lying to us. And that's kind of, you know, a lot of what this show was started on, you know, and I think we have all kind of learned the news is not lying to us, but the news, depending on where you get it from, certainly holds a bias. And what they do is, you know, because they are under rules and regulations, so they just really, it's really hard for a major news source to just outright lie to you. But what they can do is they can give more attention to lesser details that fall in line with their bias and leave things out. Because leaving things out most times doesn't go against the rules and regulations, as long as the details that they are, you know, bumping up are true. And because platforms like YouTube allow accounts like this to exist under the guise of commentating, the videos can be monetized, letting the cash roll in. YouTube did not immediately respond to Rolling Stone's request for comment. Yeah, a lot of this stuff is happening on YouTube and TikTok. TikTok too, which TikTok is definitely more even between male and female viewers, but YouTube has a wild male bias. And so, listen, I know women, we have a lot to do in our day, but I do think more women getting into YouTube, getting onto YouTube, being active on YouTube, making your own vlogs on YouTube. I think that's super important. If you are interested in being in the space of being an influencer or a comedian or something like that. Obviously, if you're like a nurse, you know, don't do that. Don't start a YouTube channel, please. I was at the gym today. I was trying to do my TRX and I couldn't, this, you know, a 55-year-old man's making a TikTok next to me. I want to blow my goddamn brains out. Since Woods' first claims, Warner's fans have continued to support him, similar to how Stans rallied around Depp during his lawsuit against Heard. And earlier this month, accounts doubled down on their harassment after Warner accused Ashley Smithline recanted her testimony and claimed that she had been manipulated by Wood and others to lie about her relationship with Warner. And we did a story a couple weeks ago covering that. You know, I surmise it's because Ashley Smithline, you know, we've never heard of her. And all of a sudden, I'm sure she was getting a ton of attacks and, you know, maybe doxed, things like that. And she just was like, you know, it's not even fucking worth it to put up with this. And that's why so many people, when they come forward, either regret it, end up settling out of court for money and don't end up taking these people down. And that's why they continue to get away with their bad behavior. And also when it's famous person against famous person, so Evan Rachel Wood against Marilyn Manson, for instance, a lot of times society is just going to side with the person whose art means more, is more valuable to their society. And no matter what you think of Marilyn Manson, he is a more successful artist as far as notoriety than Evan Rachel Wood. The same as Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, who, if we erased all of Amber Heard's movies, I don't think anyone would really miss them. If we erase all of Johnny Depp's movies, there's a void in cinema. And so because of that, because these men made a greater contribution in our eyes to things that we love, it's much harder to say we don't want you anymore, because it's going to affect our lives and the things that we like. And we, you know, we humans are selfish people. So Evan Rachel Wood has denied Smithline's accusations, stating in a court declaration that she never pressured or manipulated Ashley Morgan Smithline to make any accusations against plaintiff Brian Warner. And I certainly never pressured or manipulated her to make accusations that were not true. A representative for Wood previously told Rolling Stone that they believe outside harassment may have played a role in Smithline's reversal. And I got to be honest, like even stories like this get into my head, you know. So I'm, you know, I, you know, when I connected with Luana Mancuso regarding the alleged Mark Harley abuse, I wanted to talk to her and make sure that everything I was going to talk about on Guys We Fucked was okay with her. And I want to make sure that, you know, that we were able to really show people the alleged abuse that she was undergoing. But I also wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to say anything that she didn't want out there or make her feel uncomfortable or kind of pressure her to make the story more public than, you know, she wanted it to. She was the one who initially wanted to make it public. But, you know, that was like I had all this shit in my head during it, too. It gets into your head and there's no way to get it out. In one example, an account with more than 600,000 subscribers has posted at least 8 videos surrounding the Warner Wood trial, all of which accuse Wood of trying to defame Warner and derail his career. The videos, a majority of which are sponsored, have made the creator at least $2,000 on views alone, according to calculations made by Rolling Stone. Jesus Christ. YouTube, again, that's just such a low amount of money to be soulless for. YouTube gives creators who are part of the platform's partner program, which allows users who meet certain criteria to run ads and monetize their content, roughly $3 to $5 per 1,000 views on a video. But rates can differ based on outside sponsorships, as well as a YouTuber's subscriber number and engagement rate. Another popular account, which has accused both Wood supporters and female reporters of trying to frame Warner, has posted at least 23 videos about the Warner suit in the past 3 months, each of which not only refers to Warner as innocent, but directs viewers to donate to the creator's Patreon for more Warner updates. The videos have a total of 193,000 views. Wood isn't the only celeb who has found herself the target of online misinformation and harassment. Megan Cuniff, a trial reporter in Los Angeles, tells Rolling Stone that when she covered the trial of rapper Tory Lanez, she was shocked by how much misinformation bloggers were able to successfully spread about his victim, rapper Megan Thee Stallion. One thing that struck me was just how wrong some of these people were, Cuniff says, describing dozens of times instances in which bloggers would take her direct reporting and distort it to post videos filled with blatantly inaccurate information about the trial and its proceedings. I was just like, these people have no idea what they're talking about. It was kind of shocking. Because people don't really care about the truth. People care about being entertained, and people care about finding content that aligns with the view that they already had. And that is why, you know, liberals will continue to only, you know, read Vox, and conservatives will continue to only read Fox, because it's much, I didn't mean that to rhyme, but it was cute that it did. And because it's just much easier, especially as you get older, to continue to think the things that you always have. Because, man, what an upset when you find out that the things that you thought were true and based your life on aren't. It'll be shocking. In December 2022, Lanez, whose legal name is Daystar Peterson, was it's funny when your legal name is more wild than your performance name, but okay, was found guilty of shooting Megan in both feet. In a June 2022 Rolling Stone cover story, Megan said she was subject to almost 3 years of online harassment from bloggers accusing her of lying. I think it's so crazy that people are able to get online or publish anything that is not 100% fact, she said. That really is messing with my life. How are you able to do it and get away with it? Cuniff grew a following online for Purdue. And I think, honestly, what is going to start to happen is that as the internet grows and grows and more everyday people kind of elevate themselves into influencers or people who enjoy 15 minutes of fame, what you do is, along with the good parts of fame, I think we're also going to see regular people kind of have to be opened up to the scrutiny and bad parts of fame, which one of the major parts of being a public person is that it's a lot easier to be sued for slander, for defamation, for these kinds of things. And also you have little to no privacy laws protecting yourself. As someone who's already open to those things and has been sued many times, I'm looking forward to you guys enjoying the bad parts of fame, honestly. Cuniff grew a following online for producing trial updates that were informed and detailed, but because many popular bloggers and YouTubers aren't experts in the legal field or even bound to the same ethical and reporting standards of journalists, which I think is wildly important, Cuniff tells Rolling Stone that it allows people to take work directly from journalists and then misrepresent it for clicks. There's this whole monetization of trials that's going on, Cuniff says, people who just want to get clicks. But there's an irresponsibility to the exploitation that comes with breathlessly covering this stuff in a YouTube-like fashion. According to Ruth Glenn, president of public affairs for the National Domestic Violence Hotline, online harassment campaigns are often successful because they rely on the average person being misinformed about how domestic violence occurs. And man, I saw that like spread like wildfire this week. People, and it's not, this information, guys, is extremely accessible. And obviously, yes, I had, you know, 10 years head start because of the stuff that we do on Guys We Fucked, talking about that, learning about that. I kind of did just, you know, put myself into this corner of like women's issues of domestic violence. I know it is not only a women's issue, but I am dealing with it as a women's issue, mostly. But it's really not hard to kind of read a little bit about how domestic violence and abuse works. And absolutely no one did that before they opened their big, big mouths. Even in the case of famous couples, abuse doesn't change when millions of dollars are involved. It's still about power. And like, also, if you think that like being famous changes how you act in a relationship or changes like what love is, like that's not so. Like they're still people. When you have a male superstar and you have a woman superstar, we know who's going to be believed, Glenn tells Rolling Stone. You've got money. Why didn't you just go? Well, no, because it's not that simple. It's about control. It's a very complicated thing. So when you don't understand those dynamics and you see this woman, it looks as though everything is fine and she's got a lot of money, the backlash against them is pretty strong. Margot Lindauer, an expert in law and domestic violence, tells Rolling Stone that women are often easier targets for harassment and misinformation campaigns because social media has become a public forum for debate. But she adds, this is nothing new. The same tactics historically used to discredit women in the courtroom are now being used online. Lucky us. Happy Women's History Month. There is this idea that victims of interpersonal violence must be perfect in this very specific way, Lindauer says. They can't be sexual beings. They have to be cisgender. They have to be white. They have to be pure. They have to be all of these to even be able to assert that they've been harmed. And I find this line of thinking to be incredibly problematic and part of this generalized misogyny that we have towards women, and particularly women of color. Lindauer points to Heard's past relationships, Megan Thee Stallion's dating history, and Wood's past roles that included nudity or sex, all things bloggers have used to imply the women were liars, untrustworthy, or simply seeking attention. She also, it's so funny to call women who are sexual beings or more overtly sexual than other people as attention seekers. It's like we're all trying to be famous, and many times the only way people will give women attention is when they are perceived to be fuckable. So it's like you're complicit in this just as much as anyone else. She also says that online accounts often reinforce their twisted narratives by directly targeting journalists or lawyers working on cases, which can discourage people from speaking up about misinformation they see online. Yeah, I mean, the amount of private DMs I got, you know, when I decided to talk about Mark Harley and Luana Mancuso last week were wild. People were like, wow, I'm like, that's great that you're doing that, but I wouldn't do that. It's like, well, someone fucking has to do it, guys. So, well, we're just all going to walk around, be a bunch of pussy ass bitches. Pathetic. We're headed in a scary direction. As a society, we give a lot of power and respect to men in power. Lindauer tells Rolling Stone, and it doesn't feel like there's the same element of protection for famous women as there is for men that are accused. History has proven that Wood's case is not unique. Warner's defamation case against the actress is still ongoing, and unlike Heard's, is not televised. Thank God. Making it unclear whether online accusations, if any, will play a deciding factor in the case's outcome. But each of the three experts who spoke with Rolling Stone said ongoing harassment campaigns are actively changing how high-profile abuse and violence cases are handled in the future. There's definitely a big court of public opinion. These online accounts are winning, Cunniff says. The courtroom is hopefully isolated, but it changes the way society thinks about things. And I think that's the most important part. So it's like, even if this is a closed courtroom, even if the jurors aren't seeing this information, as they shouldn't, I mean, that's like kind of like the number one thing that's important if you're being tried in front of a jury of your peers, is that you don't have this. I have to see, I don't even know if that's a... Can you guys check if the Warner Evan Rachel Wood trial, if that's going in front of just a judge or if there is actual jury? I can't remember how that one is playing out, because I think that greatly affects things. I mean, even though judges are certainly corrupt as well, because they're talking jury, so I'm thinking jury. It could make it so all the next jury pools you get are just a little bit changed through the cultural focus on this. Yeah, I like forgot what the rules are, like why things, why trials sometimes just have a judge and sometimes they have a jury. I can't remember. But I think that's important because, you know, it's a jury of your peers. It's like, well, as society changes and society sees more of cases like this, jurors might not have seen TikToks and YouTube videos about Evan Rachel Wood and Marilyn Manson, but their brain has already been tarnished by seeing the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial play out. And so they're just going to use that as an example because their brain goes, oh, this looks familiar. She must be a lying whore. All right. Hey, responsible wackos over the age of 21 living in states where Delta 8 is legal. Do you guys want to get high? Do you want to get really high? Do you want to get really super duper legally high? Well, then now's the time to go to yoDelta.com where you can stock up on high quality lab tested Delta 8. This is one of our oldest sponsors here on Without a Country. We love them. We know the products work. My friends love them. They can't stop asking me to get more of their vapes and gummies for them because they want to be high out of their fucking mind all the time because they can't handle the world. And why would you want to? That's why I drink Red Bull. It's a different way of handling the world. So if you're over the age of 21 and living in the majority of states where this is legal, you're going to go to yoDelta.com and stock up on Delta 8. What's Delta 8? It's found in hemp and can be legally shipped to various states and get you high. At yoDelta.com, you can find a mix of gummies and vapes for all your getting stoned needs. And I can tell you that Delta 8 works and these products should be taken responsibly. Again, my friends consume a lot of this kind of stuff, and they really specifically love this product. So once more, that's yoDelta.com, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the GAS Digital Network. And if you use promo code GAS, G-A-S, you're going to get 25% off. Once more, that's promo code GAS, G-A-S, for 25% off. YoDelta, home of the Delta 8 that will get you super high. Now, back to Without a Country. All right, so we'll get the answer on that, but we'll move on in the meantime.
It says it won't get to court, at least this far.
What, it won't get to court?
It says Marilyn Manson's accuser, 180, won't go into court in Evan Rachel Wood case, judge rules.
When was that
this
from?
4 weeks ago.
Interesting. So they're not, well, that's not good. Because I was like, this article's from March 20th. Does it say why?
No, I was reading. It's just recounting everything that's happened and like some text messages and things like that. But I'm trying to find out.
Okay, I'll have to read more up on that. That it's not even going to court. That's news to me. All right. So this is from clickondetroit.com. I don't know how reputable this is, but it's a real, you know, it's a real story. So Michigan GOP compares gun reform to Holocaust in tweet. It's about a tweet. That's why I wasn't that concerned about where it was coming from. I believe Harrington gave this one to me. Oh, and by the way, Mike Harrington isn't here this week because he's off in the hospital having his baby. So we have G Mike here. It's confusing because it is a mic, but it's a different mic. So everyone's like, what? State lawmakers looking to pass gun safety legislation Lansing's ongoing gun reform debate that was reignited by the Michigan State University mass shooting. The state Republican Party took to Twitter to compare such reform to the Holocaust. The Michigan GOP on Wednesday tweeted a photo referencing the Holocaust to apparently show its disapproval for gun reform in Michigan and beyond. The image showed a container of rings taken from people imprisoned in the Holocaust with overlaid text saying before they collected all these wedding rings, they collected all the guns. Woof. The tweet itself said governments that want total control first disarm their people, appearing to try to connect proposed gun reform to eliminating the Second Amendment, an idea that is not being considered by lawmakers. This is a rough photo here. The Holocaust, which was the... I love when they explain the Holocaust. The Holocaust, which was the systematic state-sponsored persecution and murder of 6 million European Jews by the Nazi German regime and its allies and collaborators, is frequently used as a comparison when mentioning an infringement of rights. Between 1933 and 1945, during World War II, Nazi Germany and its allies killed about two-thirds of Europe's entire Jewish population using methods like mass shootings and gassings, and specially designed killing centers. To the dismay of many, especially those of Jewish heritage, the brutal genocide is often inappropriately compared to political issues and situations that do not share the same degree of severity. The comparisons are especially concerning to Jewish people amid a recorded rise in anti-Semitism across the U.S. in the last 2 years. Many worry that belittling the devastation of the Holocaust and what led to it will only lead to more anti-Semitic acts. I'm also going to pop in here and say, I think just as much as the Holocaust is misused and compared to things that are definitely a different level of severity, we do the same thing with the witch trials, but witches just feel like fanciful and a long time ago. None of those people were witches. And so if people are fine with it, but like, you know, if you're going to be mad about that, also be mad about the witch thing. New, because people will be like, it's a witch hunt. And it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It was like a couple tweets in quotes defaming someone is the same as being burned alive in front of your townspeople. Very similar. New Michigan GOP chair Christina Caramo, the failed 2022 Republican candidate for Michigan Secretary of State, tweeted her own statement Wednesday morning in response to calls to delete the Holocaust tweet. Caramo doubled down on the message, saying the Michigan GOP stands by our statement, claiming that Democratic lawmakers are attempting to disarm people and citing concerns of potential governmental abuse. The Michigan GOP's Holocaust tweet comes at a time when Democratic lawmakers are pushing for the passage of so-called common sense gun safety laws that would establish universal background checks, red flag laws, and safe storage requirements. Legislatures are hoping to pass the 11-bill package with the help of their newly acquired Democratic majority in the state House, Senate, and governor's office. And of course, what's, you know, funny, not really, but about this article is this is, you know, mere days before another travesty of a school shooting. The majority of Michigan voters, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents support the gun reform legislation, according to WDIV Detroit News Survey. The survey found that 87.8% of Michigan voters support passage of a law requiring any person purchasing any type of gun from anyone else to go through a background check. More than 77% of voters who identified as Republican support the background check law, including 77.8% of Republican gun owners. I mean, I don't, of course you need a background check. Why are we even discussing this? Republican state lawmakers, on the other hand, have been vocal about their opposition to the gun reform package, arguing that existing laws are sufficient and the proposed laws wouldn't have prevented the MSU mass shooting if they had been in effect then. On February 13th, a 43-year-old gunman with no known ties to the university opened fire in two on-campus buildings, killing three students and injuring five others before later taking his own life. Republican State Senator Joseph Bellino argues that the laws, particularly the red flag laws, will give people a sense of false security, all while infringing on everyone's right to own a firearm to hunt or even defend themselves. Red flag laws, how many people do you actually know that hunt? I mean, like, certainly not in this area of the country. Yes, in the Midwest, absolutely, probably most people I know grew up in a hunting family, but in this area, no one's hunting. So if they need a gun, they're about to kill you. Red flag laws, which already exist in some countries, are designed to temporarily remove guns from people with potentially violent behavior to prevent them from hurting themselves or others. Advocates for gun reform in Michigan are seeking to make the process for buying a firearm more thorough in an effort to prevent guns from getting into the wrong hands. I mean, guys, the answer is obvious. Just let only women buy guns. Come on. But many advocates aren't seeking to eliminate civilian-owned firearms entirely, and neither are most lawmakers. In fact, experts on U.S. gun violence and the path forward say that the solution to such violence isn't taking guns away from responsible gun owners at all. It's about preventing people who have access who should not, said Dr. Patrick Carter, co-director of the Firearm Injury Prevention Center at the University of Michigan. Dr. Carter and the center are working to better understand gun violence, potential prevention, and solutions and how they're implemented. I don't know, just look at any other country. He says the policy isn't the only solution to address gun violence, but it's certainly one solution. Red flag laws in particular have become an increasingly frequent tool that he finds promising when it comes to decreasing the potential for violence. Michigan senators approved the gun safety package last week on a 20-17 party line vote, sending it to the state house where it might get taken up this week. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has already said she will sign the package if it reaches her desk. Under current Michigan law, A person has to be 18 years old or older to purchase a rifle or shotgun, and at least 21 years old to buy a handgun from a federally licensed dealer. Certain licenses do allow 18-year-olds to purchase a handgun from a private seller. I also think that this age should go up. I don't think you should be able to have a gun before you can have a beer. That seems a little wild. The bills passed by the Michigan Senate would require a background check for anyone purchasing a rifle or shotgun. A background check is currently only required for handgun purchases. The legislation would also require all firearm purchases to be registered. Part of the legislation includes safe storage laws, which would create penalties for storing or leaving a firearm where it may be accessed by a minor. This issue particularly gained attention in 2021 when a then 15-year-old student opened fire at Oxford High School, killing 4 students and injuring 7 other people. Prosecutors say the shooter, who pleaded guilty to all crimes against him, easily obtained the handgun from his home, arguing it wasn't secured at all. It was my mom's fault. She left it out. That stupid cunt. All right. Moving on to the next one. This is one that, of course, comedians got all over. This just has comedian written all over it. But this is from CNN. It is called "What's Digital Blackface and Why Is It Wrong When White People Use It?" So, I mean, these are the kinds of things that we're focusing on while kids are getting slain in schools, just in case you guys were wondering. All right. Maybe you shared that viral video of Kimberly Sweet Brown Wilkins telling a reporter, after narrowly escaping an apartment fire, "Ain't nobody got time for that." Perhaps you posted that meme of supermodel Tyra Banks exploding in anger on America's Next Top Model. "I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you." Or maybe you've simply posted popular GIFs, such as the one of NBA great Michael Jordan crying, or of drag queen RuPaul declaring, "Girl, we're in trouble here on the show." If you're black and you've shared such images online, you get a pass. But if you're white, you may have inadvertently perpetuated one of the most insidious forms of contemporary racism. You may be wearing digital blackface. What is digital blackface? Well, digital blackface, according to CNN, is a practice where white people, it was a slow news day apparently, where white people co-opt online expressions of black imagery, slang, catchphrases, or culture to convey comic relief or express emotions. These expressions, what one commentator calls racialized reactions, are mainstays in Twitter feeds, TikTok videos, and Instagram reels, and are among the most popular internet memes. This has been going on for years. White people are just more interested in black people because white people are boring. Digital blackface involves white people play acting at being black, says Lauren Michelle Jackson, an author and cultural critic, in an essay for Teen Vogue. Jackson says the internet feels like a bit of a heavy article for Teen Vogue, but okay. Jackson says the internet thrives on white people laughing at exaggerated displays of blackness, reflecting a tendency among some to see black people as walking hyperbole. Okay. If you're still not sure how to define digital blackface, Jackson offers a guide. She says it includes displays of emotion stereotyped as excessive. So happy, so sassy, so ghetto, so loud. Our dial is on 10 all the time. Rarely are black characters afforded subtle traits or feelings. Okay, but to argue that nothing, like when you're using a GIF or a meme or anything, like nothing about that is subtle, no matter what the color of the person featured is, you know? It's like Honey Boo Boo is white, but she's popular online because she's not subtle either. So I think this is a bit of a weak argument, but okay. Many white people choose images of black people when it comes to expressing exaggerated emotions on social media, a burden that black people didn't ask for, she says. We are your sass, your nonchalance, your fury, your delight, your annoyance, your happy dance, your diva, your shade, your yas moments, Jackson writes. The weight of reaction gifting, period, rests on our shoulders. Why digital blackface is wrong. Some may say posting a video of Sweet Brown saying, "Oh Lord Jesus, it's a fire," is just for laughs. Why overthink it? Why give people yet another excuse for labeling white people racist for the most innocuous behaviors? But critics say digital blackface is wrong because it's a modern day repackaging of minstrel shows. Wow, this is a stretch. Okay. A racist form of entertainment popular in the 19th century. That's when white actors faces darkened with burnt cork entertained audiences by playing black characters as bumbling, happy-go-lucky simpletons. The practice continued in the 20th century on hit radio shows such as Amos and Andy. Historical blackface has never truly ended, and Americans have yet to actively confront their racist past to this day, Aaron Wong writes in an academic paper on the topic. In fact, minstrel blackface has emerged into even more subtle forms of racism that are now glorified all over the internet. Wong says that digital blackface is wrong because it culturally appropriates the languages and expressions of black people for entertainment. That's what a GIF is for anyone, people. While dismissing the severity of everyday instances of racism black people encounter, such as police brutality, job discrimination, and educational inequity. Yeah, I mean, if it was a GIF of a black person getting pulled over by the police, that would be inappropriate. Okay, I'll give us some thoughts on this. I discussed it a little bit yesterday on the Love First show, but that's, you know, that's not a new show. So defining digital blackface isn't easy, probably because it's mostly made up. In trying to define digital blackface, it depends on who you talk to. The standard for some is comparable to what one Supreme Court justice once said when asked his test for pornography. I know it when I see it. Oh, God. This guidance might help. If a white person shares an image online that perpetuates stereotypes of black people as loud, dumb, hyperviolent, or hypersexual, they've entered digital blackface territory. And yet, even with that definition, it's hard to figure out exactly what is and isn't digital blackface. This is the challenge that Elizabeth Halford faces. Halford, a brand designer, wrote an apologetic essay in 2020 about how she made a meme out of Wilkins' "Ain't Nobody Got Time for That" catchphrase and sent someone a GIF of the singer Beyoncé repeating, "I'm not bossy, I'm the boss." "I've engaged in digital blackface," Halford wrote. Oh my God. This is a hard one to get through, guys. This is so ridiculous. "I've laughed at people of color on the news facing horrifying crime and disaster and loss." Yeah, but we've all done that this is like a societal problem. I mean, we've done this to women. We've done this to children. We've done this to all types of people. "I've appropriated black trauma as punchlines and peeled," you know, it's like we fucking made a movie about Titanic. You know, those people actually drowned. Like, you know what I'm saying? "I've appropriated black trauma as punchlines and peeled their faces off to put on my own and say what I can't say to make you laugh or just because it went viral." God, I mean, if you're relying on a fucking GIF to be funny, you're just not a funny person. I mean, I think that's also an issue here. Halford tells CNN she was bothered that she overlooked the context of Sweet Brown's interview. The woman had just experienced a tragedy. "I guess we find it funny the way black people tell their story with so much flair," she says. "But at the end of the day, one woman's apartment building burned down while she was in bed." Yeah, that's not funny, but we make gifts out of all kinds of things that aren't funny. I mean, how many? Someone gave me a fucking greeting card, a belated birthday greeting card with Amber Heard on the front, and it said, "Sorry, I shit the bed and missed your birthday." That also wasn't funny. Okay, so what are we even talking about here? But Halford says that doesn't mean she won't use any more gifts of black people. She doesn't object to the Beyoncé "I'm the boss" meme because she thinks it empowers women. She says that as long as the meme or gif is empowering and not demeaning, she feels free to use it. Besides, Halford says if she refrains from using any black memes, she runs into another problem. "Those are the most effective because white people are so boring," she says. All right, well, she said what I said earlier. And also, all white people aren't boring. That's also a stereotype. So, you know, I'm not fucking boring. Jackson, in her Vogue essay, acknowledges it can be hard to know where to draw the line. Now, I'm not suggesting that white and non-black people refrain from ever circulating a black person's image for amusement or otherwise, she writes. There's no prospective or proscriptive step-by-step rulebook to follow. Nobody's coming to take gifts away. But no digital behavior exists in a deracialized vacuum, she says. A white person can spread digital blackface without malicious intent. Digital blackface does not describe intent, but an act, the act of inhabiting a black persona. She adds, employing digital technology to co-opt a perceived cachet or black cool, too, involves play-acting blackness in a minstrel-like tradition. This article is like when you need to hand something in for school and you don't really have a topic. And so you just really create a problem for yourself that you then solve. No matter how brief the performance or playful the intent, summoning black images to play types means pirouetting on over 150 years of American blackface tradition. So whatever happened to Sweet Brown? Another challenge with defining digital blackface is that some of the alleged victims of the practice might chafe at being labeled casualties of racism. Consider what happened to the woman now known as Sweet Brown after she went viral. She hired an agent and appeared on The View and Jimmy Kimmel Live. An auto-tuned version of her original video now has at least 22 million views. Yeah, she got rich. She's happy. Sweet Brown did go public with accusations that she had been exploited, but it had little to do with her race, or she didn't get rich. And then so that's the problem there. But she should have gotten rich. In 2013, she sued Apple at an Oklahoma radio show over using her likeness without permission and producing a song sold on iTunes that sampled some of her catchphrases. Now, that's an actual problem, because that's like, you know, that's her intellectual property. That's what she said. That's her thing. So she should be getting paid for that. Fuck yeah, she should be getting paid for that. Is Sweet Brown the victim of digital blackface, or did she benefit from the exposure? No, she's not getting paid, bitch. It's a tough question, but in the meantime, if you are a white person who is contemplating using a hold my wig gif, you should consider the advice Jackson offers in her Teen Vogue essay. And I just sit back and think about how hilarious it is that CNN picked up a story that originated in Teen Vogue. Wow, wow, wow. So this is what you're reading. You're an adult. Maybe you have a college degree. Maybe you don't. But we just sat together and we basically read a Teen Vogue essay. But we read it because it has now circulated so much online because of this CNN article that it created a new problem where there was none. Let's see. You should consider the advice Jackson offers in her Teen Vogue essay to white people who play act being black online. Jackson writes, if you find yourself always reaching for a black face to release your inner sass monster, please never use that phrase again. Maybe consider going to the extra country mile and pick this nice Taylor Swift gift instead. Now, this is interesting because the reason I picked this article is, number one, because I think it is an example of liberals creating a problem and concentrating a greater divide between different groups of people where one did not initially exist. Believe me, there's a lot of racism in this country. There's a lot of racism that is important, that needs to be targeted. This, in my opinion, is not part of that. But it's funny because I do avoid using gifts of black entertainers because I fucking knew that one day someone would find a problem with it. And I've just have enough PTSD about problems of this nature that I was like, it's not even worth it. This is not the fight that I am on this planet to fight, okay? And then when I saw this article, I go, fuck, bitch, you were right. You were right. I knew that someone eventually was going to need to hand in an article to Teen Vogue, and they weren't going to have a topic, and they were going to have to make one up, and it was going to be about black entertainers in GIFs. And you know what, guys? I was correct, okay? Yeah, I mean, I think gifts in general and things that we, you know, this kind of does go hand in hand with the article about the online misogyny playbook, if you really think about it. This is, you know, maybe an online racism playbook or whatever, but it's like we downplay a lot of tragedies in this country with memes, but, you know, it's hard because I've laughed at really fucked up memes many times before, and I don't think that because you laugh at a fucked up meme or use a GIF that originated in someone's tragedy, I don't think that means that you don't have empathy for their situation. I think it means more so, as it does in stand-up comedy, that we have to kind of laugh about the most fucked up things because that's where we need the relief and the respite. I've laughed at a lot of terrible. It doesn't mean that I don't think that the original things were not atrocities. It just means you can be a complex person. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I experienced my dad's death and it was the most depressing time of my life. But I also have a ton of jokes about it on stage because I needed to do both. You know, like both are healing to me. Both are ways to talk about it. Both are ways to conquer the grief that I feel and felt. everything is so, I mean, not to lean into it more, but everything is truly so black and white. It's like, I feel like we're just getting stupider and we're not able to even appreciate ourselves as complex beings. It's pretty pathetic, quite honestly. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers professional counseling done securely online. So if you feel like there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, definitely check out BetterHelp. You know, I talk about this all the time. I go to online therapy. I love online therapy because it doesn't add anything extra to your day. You don't have to get to an office. You don't have to go anywhere. It's literally an hour, 45 minutes of your time, and you get to get everything that's bothering you off your chest, and you do feel better when it's done. Everyone needs someone to talk to, no matter what you're going through in your life. Whatever you're dealing with, BetterHelp has a wide range of counselors available for you. Plus, BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. And it's easy to get started. So once you sign up, BetterHelp will match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you'll be able to communicate with in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. And BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So it's easy and free to switch counselors if needed. You can send a message to your counselor at any time and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. So it's the perfect way to go do therapy during a busy life that we all have. And you don't have to go back to sitting in uncomfortable waiting rooms in the future. You're going to head over to BetterHelp.com/WAC, as in without a country, to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. New testimonials from users are posted daily. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Again, you're going to go to BetterHelp.com/WAC. That's BetterHelp.com/WAC to get 10% off your first month. One more time, that's BetterHelp.com/WAC for 10% off your first month. Now, back to the news. All right. And also, yeah, well, I would say, you know, ask a black person, but don't bother. Don't bother them with this fucking question. It's so ridiculous. All right, let's move on to other shit right now. This one is a woman. This is going along with Women's History Month. Woman framed in rape fantasy plot speaks out after conviction of ex-U.S. Marshal. This is from NBC News. Ian Diaz's conviction could not have come at a more joyous time for Michelle Hadley. It happened on the same day she gave birth to her first child, a baby girl. Michelle Hadley was a 29-year-old graduate student living in California when her ex-boyfriend falsely accused her of a lurid crime. By the time the case unraveled in early 2017, she had lost her job, her reputation, and her faith in law enforcement. But late last week, a federal jury convicted the ex-boyfriend, Ian Diaz, a former U.S. deputy marshal, of setting up Hadley by making it seem as if she had lured men to his home to sexually assault his then wife. Diaz had framed Hadley as part of a twisted plot to get her to walk away from a condo they had purchased together, according to federal prosecutors. The guilty verdict represents a fresh round of vindication for Hadley, who spent 88 days in jail as a result of Diaz's scheme and who has waited more than 6 years for him to pay for his crimes. I am so grateful to the Justice Department Office of Inspector General for the work they put into this case and to the jury for a conviction that has brought so much peace to my family and restored some of the faith we lost in the justice system as a result of Diaz's crimes against me, Hadley said in a statement to NBC News. Diaz's conviction could not have come at a more joyous time in Hadley's life. Incredibly, it happened on the same day she gave birth to her first child, a baby girl. My life has been filled by strange, often symbolic, and sometimes beautiful coincidences like this, Hadley said. Uh-oh, we're getting woo-woo now. My daughter represents my rainbow after a very long storm, and my heart has never felt so full. The criminal case dates back to the spring of 2016. After Hadley's two-year relationship with Diaz ended in August 2015, they became locked in a dispute over their condominium in Anaheim, according to federal prosecutors. Diaz married a different woman in February 2016. They always move forward so fast, don't they? In May of that year, he and his new wife, Angela Diaz, created multiple online accounts using Hadley's name. Oh my God, the amount of new wives and girlfriends who just go along in this attack against the ex is wild to me. They then use the accounts to entice men found through Craigslist to come to their home to engage in a, quote, rape fantasy with Angela, according to the indictment. The plot worked. Diaz and his wife staged one or more hoax sexual assaults and then contacted police to report that Hadley was responsible for hiring the men, prosecutors say. And this is a wild story because we know how few real sexual assaults get taken seriously. So, of course, one that was staged by a dude and his new wife works out and actually gets treated seriously by prosecutors in the legal system. Hilarious. Hilarious if it wasn't so sad. When police showed up at Diaz's home on June 13th, 2016, he told officers that Hadley needs to be in fucking cuffs and in a padded room, the indictment says. Diaz says that he investigated threats made to federal judges and prosecutors in his role as a U.S. Marshal, but had, quote, never seen anything like this, according to the indictment. At what point does this girl get arrested for sending this shit? Also so demeaning. She's a full-grown ass woman. And hiring guys off Craigslist to rape Angela, he told the officers, the indictment says. Hadley was arrested by Anaheim police a week and a half later, after Diaz's wife called 911 to report that she had been sexually assaulted and that Hadley was responsible for setting it up, the indictment says. She was charged with felony counts of attempted forcible rape and stalking and faced up to life in prison if convicted. Hadley ultimately spent about 3 months in jail before the charges were dropped in January 2017. In a news conference at the time, Orange County District Attorney Tony Rakakis described Hadley as an innocent victim of a diabolical scheme. Wow, diabolical. You know it's serious when they whip out diabolical. Angela Diaz was charged with 10 felony counts. She pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 5 years in prison in October 2017. Enjoy your vacation, you dumb bitch. Angela Diaz, who is now divorced from Ian... What a surprise. It didn't work out. Could not be reached. Hadley filed a lawsuit against the city of Anaheim and four of its police officers in late 2018, alleging they rushed to charge her based on clearly doctored emails. At its heart, this is a case about the blue wall of silence, law enforcement officers and officials enabling fellow officers to violate civilians' rights. I think it's also a case about if a man chimes in about sexual assault against a woman, it's going to get taken more seriously than if just a woman says it happened to her. So don't overlook that part of it. The Anaheim Police Department, but of course I agree that the police are corrupt. I think we all know that by now. And if you don't, you're dumb or you're a police officer. And sorry about that. The Anaheim Police Department and its officers abdicated their duties to adhere to investigative norms, instead conspiring to do the bidding of a corrupt federal marshal. They appear to have willingly become Ian Diaz's weapon in his tortious. I don't even know that word. I got to look this up. Wait, this is the part where we look up a word that I don't know, because it looks like it's torturous, but it's not. It's tortious. Oh, fuck. It says constituting a tort. And it just means wrongful. OK, that's a good word to know, guys. Sorry, back to this. You know, I love using new words and learning them. Okay, so they appear to have willingly become Ian Diaz's weapon in his tortious campaign, wrongful campaign, to ruin the life of his ex-girlfriend, plaintiff Michelle Hadley. Hadley accepted a settlement from the city of Anaheim in April 2021. The amount was not disclosed. I hope it was $1 billion, quite honestly. 1 month later, Diaz was arrested on federal charges of cyberstalking, conspiracy to commit cyberstalking, and perjury. Prosecutors and law enforcement did not say why it had taken 5 years to charge him. Diaz's trial kicked off earlier this month. The jury found him guilty on all counts on March 23rd. after deliberating for less than 2 days. Wow, you know you're a scumbag when it takes that little time. His sentencing is set for June 30th. Diaz, now 44, faces a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. Ian Diaz abused his position as a deputy U.S. Marshal to execute an intricate cyberstalking scheme that framed an innocent person for sexual assault, leading to her unjust imprisonment for 88 days, said Assistant Attorney General Kenneth A. Polite of the Justice Department's Criminal Division. Diaz's lawyer, Karen Goldstein, did not... It is funny that his lawyer is a Karen, did not respond to a request for comment. Can you imagine being a woman and taking on that case? Yuck. Uh-oh. There's Michelle Hadley wearing a shirt that I also have. Cool. Carrie Goldberg, the lawyer who handled Hadley's federal lawsuit, praised the Justice Department team that successfully prosecuted Diaz. Last year, through our civil case, Michelle got financial justice from Anaheim. Today, she gets justice against Ian Diaz, the mastermind, Goldberg said. May this be a warning to offenders everywhere who dare to weaponize the criminal justice or legal systems. You will not get away with it. But honestly, a lot of times you probably will. Hadley described the last few years as very difficult and emotional due to a number of factors, not least of which was this case. But she has managed to move on and give back. She has started her own retail business and has helped to raise money for a domestic violence shelter. I hope my story becomes a beacon of hope for other domestic violence survivors. I want them to know they are not alone, Hadley said. There are so many wonderful people in this world who care and will fight alongside them. All right, so that's one with a good ending, but I mean, man, just one more thing that women have to be nervous of, about, that you're, you know, it's one thing to be worried about your ex-boyfriend, your ex-partner, and his new girlfriend ganging up on you, but then framing you in a rape fantasy, wow, that's a fear I didn't have before today, but now I do. Thanks, news. All right, here's something to cleanse the palate. This is from the New York Post, and it's a very New York Post-y story. Convicted child rapist to be chemically castrated in Louisiana. Quite honestly, I didn't even know we were still doing chemical castration in this country, but apparently we are. And this guy just got one serving of it. A Louisiana man convicted, I want to also chime in. I don't know how I feel about it. It feels, this is a bad guy, no doubt. But I don't know how I feel about this. I don't think I like it. It feels very Renaissance fairy and in a bad way. A Louisiana man convicted of raping a girl under the age of 13 will be chemically castrated in addition to serving 35 years in prison, a judge ruled this week. Ryan Clark, 30. Okay, so right there, it's like, okay, if this guy has a chance of getting out, because he's, you know, and still roaming, you know, the earth or whatever, because he's only 34 years old. So he gets out, you know, good behavior. He probably gets out in his 50s or 60s, quite honestly. And then this is a guy walking around chemically castrated. So it's like, yeah, maybe he can't fuck underage, you know, kids. You know, well, kids are inherently underage gals anymore. But I would think he'd be pretty angry, you know? And I don't think that it's good to send a very angry man out into the world. Okay, that's just my thoughts on the matter. So anyway, he'll be chemically castrated in addition to serving 35 years in prison. Ryan Clark, 34, was also ordered to make no contact with the victim. I think that goes without saying. Register as a sex offender for life and forfeit all his parental rights to any children, according to Tangipahoa Parish District Attorney Scott Perilou. Clark of Kentwood pleaded guilty to second-degree rape, molestation of a juvenile under 13, and sexual battery on March 1st. He was sentenced Tuesday by Judge Brian Abels. Chemical castration was made legal in Louisiana in 2008 as a sentencing for those found guilty of certain crimes, including molestation of a juvenile, aggravated rape, forcible rape, second-degree sexual battery, aggravated incest, and aggravated crime against nature, according to WVUE. The process involves injections of medroxyprogesterone acetate, a drug that suppresses a man's sex drive by depleting testosterone levels, the outlet reported. The injections must be administered at least a week before a convicted sex offender is released from prison. An investigation into Clark began in July 2020 after the Tangipahoa Parish Sheriff's Office was tipped off about inappropriate behavior between Clark and a minor by a person whom the victim had confided in, according to the DA. The person told authorities that the behavior had gone on for more than a year. The victim was interviewed at the Children's Advocacy Center in Hammond, where she detailed the incidents, Paralu said. A possible second victim was also discovered during the investigation. No additional details about the incidents were made available. Clark was arrested on July 17th, 2020, and charged with sexual battery and molestation of a juvenile. After further investigation, he was additionally charged with first-degree rape. The convicted rapist was previously convicted in 2015 of misdemeanor carnal knowledge of a juvenile for receiving oral sex in a public place from a minor. He served 128 days in the Tangopea Parish Jail. All right, so this guy loves hanging out with minors. It seems like, I mean, I don't know what you do. I just, the chemical castration just seems like, that just seems like not something we should be doing. I don't really know. Okay, so that's just that T-town that I can't properly pronounce is just a village in Louisiana. I was just looking it up because I was like, I don't know how the hell to say that. I also wanted to look, what is the difference between first degree and second degree rape? Because I know the difference between first degree and second degree murder, but I don't specifically know the difference between first and second degree rape. Okay. First degree rape is the non-consensual sexual penetration, typically committed by threat of harm or force. It can also occur if a person is incapacitated or unable to give consent. So like when doctors, you know, fuck people who are in comas and shit. Rape in the second degree is called statutory rape. Second degree rape usually involves legally non-consensual intercourse. So what? So like minors? That wasn't a really good fucking definition, to be quite honest. Rape. And then there's rape in the third degree, which they're kind of also just calling as which they define as non-consensual rape. Guys, rape is inherently non-consensual. These are fucking terrible definitions. This is why I've never even fucking heard of this before. Okay, so let's see. This is from an actual law site, lawfletcher.com. All degrees of rape are felonies in New York. Rape in the third degree is generally non-consensual sex. Rape in the second degree is when the non-consensual sex happens with someone who is less than 15 or incapable of consenting, such as due to a mental disability or incapacity. Rape in the first degree happens when non-consensual sex happens by reason of force, such as because of a real or implied threat of violence, or the victim is less than 13 years old, or 11 if the alleged rapist was a minor. Okay, great. Thank you. That's what I needed. God, I honestly, there is something so satisfying about reading things in legal terms, because it's just like there's no bias, there's no fucking opinion, there's no nonsense. It's just tell me what it is I fucking need to know. And that did it for me. All right, now on to our main story, which is our final story of the day. You know what it's about. It's a school shooting in Nashville. If you haven't heard about it, there was yet another school shooting. It happened yesterday, I believe. I did watch the body cam footage, which is available online, of the officers shooting down the school shooter. You can't really see a lot, quite honestly. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's like body cam footage, I think, is important and necessary because, you know, you can't trust police officers. But I also think it's like kind of weird that it just gets released out into the world like it's a Taylor Swift interview. I don't think that's good. And I think it really desensitizes us to how serious this problem is in the country. It's happening so much that we don't react to it in the same way that we used to. Like, I vividly remember coming home from school and watching Columbine footage and how that shook me and changed who I was as a kid. It changed schools. It changed so much about culture. And then moving forward from that, nothing has... It's like the more it happens, the less we care, almost, you know? Like, if you weren't around for Columbine, like, That stopped the world. People, we stopped school that day. Everyone went home and watched it and talked about it for a long, long time. It changed culture. It changed who we are as a country. And this is just like, oh, another school shooting, you know? So this is from the New York Times, and this is being constantly updated. So as of now, it's updated an hour ago. We're recording this on Tuesday, March 28th. The latest Nashville shooting, police say shooter was under doctor's care for emotional disorder. And I think because of who the school shooter was in this, you know, identity politics world that we live in, I think it's very interesting, specifically the difference in the coverage from liberal media to conservative media. And, you know, you'll see what I mean if you don't already get what I mean. The authorities were still searching for a motive behind the attack, which I think is a funny, again, funny used loosely way to start an article about a school shooting, because it's like, I don't know that there is ever a motive to shoot a 9-year-old. I mean, maybe if it's your own kid, but other than that, I really would say there's not going to be a motive that anyone's going to care about for why you fucking took the life of a 9-year-old. The authorities were still searching for a motive behind the attack, which killed 6 people, including 3 children, at a Christian elementary school. Here's what to know. The 20-year-old assailant used 3 guns that had been purchased legally, officials say. We cannot believe that this has happened. The victims of Nashville school shooting are remembered. And these are all articles that you can click on too. The body camera footage shows officers racing through the school to find the shooter, which you can watch online. The shooter had posted on Facebook in recent years about the death of a romantic partner, a former teacher says. Okay, I was dating someone who died. It's sad, but I didn't kill a bunch of kids. The Nashville shooting response draws comparison to Uvalde, but there are key differences. Oh, wow. Crazy. The same thing happened and we still didn't do anything about it. I'm shocked. Congregants in Dallas pack a church to mourn their former pastor's child. Surveillance video shows how the shooter entered the school. Okay. Those are all clickable articles, but then it goes on. Let's see. So the 20-year-old assailant used 3 guns that had been purchased legally, I think, is the most important one that I want to concentrate on. The assailant, who killed 6 people at a Christian elementary school in Nashville, had legally purchased 7 firearms recently, including the 3 used in the shooting, and was being treated for an emotional disorder, the Nashville police chief said on Tuesday. Those two things don't go together. The shooter, whom the police have identified as Audrey E. Hale, was under doctor's care, Chief John Drake of the Nashville Metro Police Department said at a news briefing on Tuesday afternoon. Chief Drake added that the shooter's parents felt that their child, quote, should not own weapons. So your own parents think that. Okay. The shooter purchased 7 firearms from 5 local gun stores and stashed them around the house, Chief Drake said, using 3 of them on Monday to kill 3 9-year-old children and 3 adults. The parents initially believed that their child no longer owned any firearms after selling a weapon, they told the police in interviews. Must have quite the house there if you can hide that many guns in it. They also told the police that they asked their child, who was carrying a red bag, what was inside, Chief Drake said. The shooter's mother told the police that their question was dismissed and that she didn't think any differently because she didn't know about the hidden firearms. Had the shooter's intentions been made known to us, then we would have tried to get those weapons, Chief Drake said. But as it stands, we had absolutely no idea who this person was. Chief Drake said the police had not determined a motive for the shooting, but stressed that they believed that the person and the church had been a target, not any single person. In documents, which the police and federal investigators are continuing to review, there were also writings about other locations, including a mall in the area, Don Aaron, a spokesperson for the police department, later said. The shooter had a handwritten diagram of the school. Same thing every time. Along with a drawing of how it could possibly be entered, Mr. Aaron said. There were additional writings found in the car driven to the school and the family's home, and officials are also examining a cell phone found in the car. The assailant was armed with a military-style semi-automatic rifle, 1 handgun, and a small 9mm carbine, a weapon with a rifle-length barrel, and a folding stock so that it can be more easily carried or concealed, Mr. Aaron said. A 6-minute compilation of body camera footage released by the police department on Tuesday shows how police officers raced through the school past children's artwork hanging on the walls, searching classrooms and bathrooms before killing the shooter. I will say the difference between this and Uvalde is that these police officers actually seemed to have a plan, were organized, went in. I noticed, though, this is just like a safety thing for the police officers, actually. So you always go in with bulletproof vests, but like they don't go in with any head protect. They didn't go in with any head protection, which I found to be pretty fucking wild. Do you guys know about, like, do you remember like previous body cam footage? Like when you're going in like riot gear, don't you usually protect your head too? It seems crazy not to. Your head is like, your head and your chest are the main places where you would get gunned down.
So what are you saying?
I watched the body cam footage and the officer. So you're watching one officer's body cam footage, but the officer in front of him doesn't have any headgear on.
That's wild. I wouldn't do that.
Right? I was
especially
like,
if I was in front of him.
Yeah, I was like, okay. I don't know. That just seemed like, you know, not that my main concern is like police safety, but I mean, I do think that, you know, if you're going to do something heroic, like, you know, slay a school shooter, that you should also be protected from your head. You know, I would think that you could make bolder moves if you feel more protected yourself. Anyway, I don't know. Like, I'm sure, and I'm also sure, like, different police officers departments have different budgets, and maybe like I'm more used to seeing police with headgear because I live in New York and we have more money for the police department.
I feel
here.
Like every police department just has like, I mean, different budgets, but they could get helmets if they needed.
Right? Like, shouldn't you always be prepared with full riot gear? I mean, they had full riot gear on just for the Black Lives Matter protest when they were just standing. So to me, to go into a school where you know you have an active shooter without head, I don't know. I was just like, that was the main thing that I pulled from the body cam footage. I was just fucking stunned. Anyway, I'm glad like they're okay because that was fucking crazy. Chief Jake Drake declined to confirm any additional information about the shooter, who was a former student at the school. So I'm sure, you know, kind of the motive that they're probably going to find, you know, when you find out more about the student, is that this student is a member of the LGBTQ community. I'm guessing they were going to say that they were fucked up by going to a Christian school and then they had to go in and slay some 9-year-olds. Okay. Cyrus, why is everyone's name the most difficult in a news article? Cyrus Vatandust, the president and chief executive of Nasi College of Art and Design, confirmed in a statement that the shooter had graduated from the college in 2022. This is personally funny to me because I went to art school and I could see a lot of those people shooting up at school. And I'm sorry to laugh, but it's just personally for me. No one who graduated from SVA, where I went, should be able to have a gun. And was a talented artist and a good student. On a personal website, there were drawings of landscapes, animals, and colorful patterns. And in a since-deleted Facebook post, the shooter celebrated a professor's praise of an art project. Okay, so what is this, a fucking Hitler here? He was a good artist. There was confusion about the gender identity of the assailant in the immediate aftermath of the attack. Chief Drake said the shooter identified as transgender. Officials use she and her to refer to the shooter, but according to a social media post and a LinkedIn profile, the shooter appeared to identify as male in recent months. Interesting. And so that is kind of the part that, of course, conservatives are jumping all over. And I don't think it's coincidental that New York Times waited until the last possible paragraph to say that. I was actually surprised that they kind of pointed it out at all, because if you notice earlier in the article, they're really avoiding doing that. When if it was a cisgender white male shooter, that's the first thing they say. It's in the headline. And although I think that, you know, statistically, that's just true as far as those types of shootings, I don't think that it's helpful necessarily. It's more like, why is this happening? Why don't we have stricter gun laws instead of just targeting a certain group of people? Because I think as human beings, we all want to feel safe, right? And none of us feel safe. That's the problem. So Black people don't feel safe from the cops. Women don't feel safe from men. The LGBTQ community doesn't feel safe from organized religion and from conservatives. White men don't feel safe from what? You guys, that's up to, well, you, not you.
I don't know. I don't want to get mugged.
Yeah. So lesser. Is that like a real fear that you do? You have that fear often? I guess men are like more often jumped, I suppose. Do you have like a larger societal fear, though, like a group of people that you fear? Like, is it like women taking you down for like during sexual interactions, or
I fear no one.
You fear no one. Okay. Well, I mean, that's the honest. and so I think like that's kind of like this larger conversation. We're all just trying to feel safe, to feel understood, to feel like, you know, we have a purpose in this life. But it's now been skimmed down to all just having a huge fight with one another and groups against groups. And that's really revealed in this Fox article. Of course, I had to go to Fox because you know they were going to say something about the person being transgender. So if you click on the main article, the direct link to the article, there it doesn't say anything about being transgender in the headline. But if you just go, and this is what I did first, if you go to foxnews.com, if you go to foxnews.com first, sorry, I messed something up with my computer. It definitely, the main headline that's like sprawled across the website is, of course, about the shooter being transgender. Damn, it's already fucking changed since I checked like 2 hours ago. But there was the big headline when you went to foxnews.com was transgender. Oh, here, they just made it a little bit smaller. It said transgender Nashville shooter had emotional disorder, police details on how guns obtained. So that was what it was sprawled across the Fox News website. And then when you clicked on the article, it talked about that a little bit less. But I was like, something that was mentioned in the last paragraph on the New York Times article, the main thing that they're going for on Fox News, obviously, because a lot of people who read Fox News don't want stricter gun laws. Nashville school shooter legally purchased weapons, suffered emotional disorder. Police. Audrey Hale bought 7 guns from 5 stores behind family's back, including 3 used in school shooting, the police. And this is interesting because I don't know if this person was still going by the name Audrey. I actually don't even like to name school shooters, so sorry that I said that. But I think it's important just around the conversation of being transgender because I'm like, I guess Audrey can be a man's name too. I can't remember. But otherwise, it's like they're dead naming the person, but then making a whole conversation about how they are transgender, it feels a little bit weird. Audrey man's name. I think you can name. I think it's mostly for women. Okay, anyway. Nashville school shooter Audrey Hale, a 28-year-old transgender artist and former student, legally purchased the firearms used in the attack behind the family's back despite serious emotional issues that required a doctor's attention, according to authorities. Metro Nashville Police Chief John Drake also told reporters Tuesday that a motive in the Monday attack at the Covenant School remains unknown and that the shooter had targeted the school, but not any individual victim specifically. The school operates as a ministry of Nashville's Covenant Presbyterian Church. We've interviewed the parents of the shooter, and we've determined that the shooter bought 7 firearms from 5 different local gun stores here legally, Drake said during a news briefing. They were legally purchased. 3 of those weapons were used yesterday during the horrific tragedy. The shooter's parents told police they were only aware of 1 firearm, which they believed the shooter had previously sold. They were under the impression that when the shooter sold the weapon, that they did not own any more, he said. And it turned out the shooter was hiding several weapons inside the house. He said the shooter was under a doctor's care for an unspecified emotional disorder, but was previously unknown to law enforcement. The shooter's parents felt that she should not own weapons, he said, but Hale had secretly built a collection. Sorry, I'm trying not to use the name, but it's hard, especially because there's the back and forth of the gender. So, yeah, because they're like referring to the shooter as she in the article, but then in the photo that they have, they say Audrey Hale was identified by police as the gunman who opened fire at the Covenant School on Monday morning. And the reason I have to talk about this is because you know the conservatives are going to use this in their ongoing attack on transgender people. So it's quite like it's, you know, I'm sure they were loving the fact that this shooter was transgender. In addition to the 3 guns recovered at the scene, police took a sawed-off shotgun and another shotgun from the family home. It was not immediately clear what the remaining two guns were. The shooter killed six people on Monday, 3 9-year-old students, including the pastor's daughter, and 3 adults. The shooter drove to the school on Monday around 10:15 a.m. in a Honda Fit, where police found writings that indicated the shooter's attack was calculated and planned. I mean, aren't most of them? Police also recovered diagrams of the school layout with possible entry points highlighted, as well as a drawing depicting the shooter in the same outfit worn during the attack. Within 15 minutes, responding officers took down the shooter, who was killed at the scene following an exchange of gunfire. Police said the shooter opened fire on responding officers from a second-story window before a team inside the building, including officers Rex Engelbert and Michael Collazo, put an end to the carnage. The victims were found spread out around the building and were not located in a common area, Drake told reporters. The first victim, 61-year-old custodian Michael Hill, was found dead near the entrance where Hale shot through a glass door to get inside, he said. According to a GoFundMe for his family, Hill was a father of 8. Head of school Catherine Kuntz, 60, was found in a hallway near the office, he said. The school is part of the Covenant Presbyterian Church, and victims included the pastor's daughter, Haley Scruggs, as well as Evelyn Dykehouse and William Kinney, all 9. Cynthia Peake, 61, a substitute teacher, was also killed. Oh, that just burns, because you're a substitute teacher and not even usually supposed to be there. Police said the shooter had attended the Covenant School at some point in the past. Records show the shooter went on to graduate high school 8 years ago and graduated from the Nasi College of Art last year. I mean, so I think, you know, obviously information of this will continue to trickle out over the next week or so, but the liberal, you know, news sources will continue to talk about gun reform and new legislation that needs to be introduced that Republicans tend to always shut down, and people get up in arms about, no pun intended. And then the conservative news sources are going to have a real field day with the fact that this wasn't a cisgender white male shooter, and rather a transgender individual. And that's just going to give them more ammo to attack the transgender community on top of the drag laws and bills that they introduce, which, again, drag queen, transgender person, completely different things. But they have conflated them and really continue to pump fear in people that transgender people are this big enemy. When in reality, I think that, you know, part of the reason that, you know, things like this happen, besides guns being way too readily available to people, especially people under emotional distress, is that, you know, I mean, I think if you continue to attack a certain group of people, they're going to get pissed. It's not, you know, I don't know. This is, it's not great, but we just don't care. We don't care. I don't think anything's going to get done. I don't think any gun reform is going to be passed. We just don't care. We've given up on this. We don't care. Thoughts and prayers, and we move on. We share a meme and we move on. No one cares. I want to also see if there's any more conversation about the person specifically being like, if you Google transgender shooter Nashville, just to see like who's making a thing about it and who's not. Like, even ABC News just posted a couple hours ago, anti-transgender sentiment follows Nashville shooting. After authorities said that the Nashville school shooter identified as transgender, anti-trans sentiment about the community surged from far-right political figures. Gun reform advocates and LGBTQ activists say the transgender community is being used as a scapegoat, and that focusing on the shooter's reported trans identity is a distraction from what they say is the root of the issue, guns. And I absolutely agree with that, but then you have to flip over to what liberals also always do, and it's getting a taste of your own medicine here. So it's like, yes, I agree, the focus should not be on that the shooter was transgender, but every other time there is so much focus on the shooter being a white cisgender male. So it's like, you see, you cannot pick and choose. Once you start you know, making who someone is or how someone presents as in the world, whether as opposed to why something is happening and what we can do to stop evil in the world or bad things or tragedies in the world, you get yourself in a real pickle. So yes, that shouldn't be the topic of conversation, but of course it's going to be, because that's what you've set up for yourself, liberal media. That's what you've set up for yourself. you know? And I think we're, you know, I'm definitely complicit in that because, I mean, I think, like, there does need to be a conversation about how men are still a huge threat of violence in the world. But that's not the issue here. That's not the issue with school shootings specifically, you know, and I've had conversations on this show and on Guys We Fucked about how it is misinformation that most serial killers are white men. That's not accurate. It's men. Look at the stats. There's also a ton of Latino and Black serial killers too. They're just not like sexualized in the same way and made into celebrities because we don't want to, you know, I guess no one's going to jerk off to those documentaries. Jeremy Renner can't play those roles. So that's the issue. It's not that they're not killing. They are killing. It's just not sexy to us as a community. All right. So that's the show for today. I'll try to put some more uppers in the next few weeks. We're going to have an evergreen episode airing next Tuesday. I have a really fun, I don't know, fun is maybe the wrong word to use, but I have an interesting documentary that hasn't been getting much coverage that we're going to talk about on the next Tuesday's episode while I'm in Ireland, but I'll record that later this week. Thank you so much to everyone who's listening. Continue to email anything that you have going on that you want to be covered to withoutacountrypodcast@gmail.com. I often do bring articles that people share with me to the show because I want to know what you find interesting and what you find culturally relevant. And we're going to talk about those things. Stay informed. Please follow us on Instagram at Without a Country. And then also subscribe to our YouTube channel. And that's it. I'm at Philanthropy Gal on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And I have my other podcast, Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. It's a little lighter, but sometimes we get heavy on that one too. We do interviews. We talk about feminist issues. We make jokes. We do dating and sex stories. We give advice. It's a fun time. Thanks so much, wackos. Stay vigilant. Have a great week. Take care. Bye.